You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Jose Youngs here at AnimeFighting.com for another episode of, what'd you call it the last time we did, Extra Live A-Side. We are here on the scene in Las Vegas. This is obviously Casey Live and camera extraordinaire. Esther Lynn is behind the camera. She's going to be asking questions. If you've seen this before, we've done it with Anthony Walker. We've done it with Danny Segura at UFC 244. But we're here at UFC 245 Fight Week. You can see the T-Mobile Arena in the window behind us. You all can't, but we can. But we promise you it's there.
Fight week, blog week. For all the old school MMA degenerates.
You recognize this.
Fight week, blog week.
For all the OG. No, it's, he faces it up.
Ah, jeez.
Fight week, blog week.
All right.
Well, anyway, I'm Jose. This is Casey. That's Esther. We're here for another Extra Live episode of the A-Side Live Chat for people just tuning in. As always, this is not our podcast. This is your podcast. You can ask questions in the comment section. You can use hashtag the A-Side on Twitter. We'll talk about fist fighting. We'll talk about Black Flag. We'll talk about punk music in general. We'll talk about crystals. We can talk about how he likes the Watchmen show and I haven't seen it yet. We'll talk about whatever you want. So, Esther, any good questions? There's good questions.
The A in A-Side stands for crystal.
The A in A-Side stands for... What are you drinking in there?
Coffee.
Oh, okay.
Coffee.
It's terrible decaf coffee.
I get headaches if I drink caffeine.
No, I get headaches if I don't drink caffeine.
I get headaches.
I know.
I'm Jose.
Uh-huh.
Everywhere. That's the first question? Come on.
No, the first question is, how do you feel about... This is from Grin N.
A longtime commenter.
How do you feel about Dan Mergliotta coaching Struve to continue after the second low blow in his fight with Rothwell and suggest that Struve was up on the scorecards? I personally found that very inappropriate and think... A ref's only concern should be fighter safety.
Yeah, so Casey, you were there for the UFC on ESPN 7 card in Washington, D.C. when Stefan Struve got, what, double nut kicks by Ben Rothwell and he was laying on the ground?
I read about that and I saw some video of it, but at the time, I was just literally rolling on the ground laughing
at the
yay boo thing.
Yeah.
And I think that really is the thing that we need to talk about.
Sure.
Not some reffing coaching. Yeah, you shouldn't have done that. We know he's not supposed to do that. Yeah, you shouldn't have done that. But what did Struve say? I think Struve commented on it.
Struve said to stop giving Dan Mergliotta grief because he's refereed him enough times and he's a good ref. And I think there was he shared a picture of he had a come from behind win. And in the past, Dan Mergliotta has let his fights go on longer than people should. And he's won. So I can't remember what the fight was, but he goes, leave him alone. If he wasn't my ref for this fight, I never would have had this incredible come from behind win. So
yeah, one of his
Dan was a good. Dan was a good. So basically, he was defending Dan Mergliotta.
Yeah, because he wasn't going to pull. Dan shouldn't have done it. There's a lot of shouldn't have done's, you know, in this sport. He shouldn't have done it. And he's supposed to do the whole. You see it all the time. Guys get kicked in the nut. nuts. And then they're like, hey, you go to that corner because, you know, their coaches are telling them, hey, rest or whatever, or, you know, bow out or, sure. You know. So that's all he should be saying. He should be saying, how much time you got? Go to this opposite side of the cage so you can't communicate with your corner. That's all he should have said. No, he shouldn't have done it. That's all.
Yeah, and Stefan Struve said that.
It's not the end of the world. Like, it's not like we're going to Mazzagatti him or something.
Yeah, you know? It was just what a lot of fighters said. It was like, because I was doing Twitter reacts for that, for the site, like Twitter reacts to all the fights. And a lot of fighters were like, wait, did the referee just tell him that he should keep fighting because he could probably coast to a win? And a lot of fighters thought it was inappropriate. But Stefan Struve eventually said he didn't really care. Because he said 9 out of 10 fighters, I believe our own AK Lee interviewed him like the next day or so. He said 9 out of 10 fighters would have continued fighting anyway, even if Dan Mergliotta didn't give him that pep talk. So at the end of the day, he didn't really care. Yeah. Because it's unfortunate that it happened. But he said the rules kind of screwed him because it was like 2 low blows. Like, that could have been DQ, I guess. I'm not sure. But he said 9 out of 10 fighters would have continued on even if Dan Mergliotta didn't say anything. He said he would have kept fighting even if Dan didn't say anything.
Yeah.
That's pretty much.
Yeah, but what is Struve going to say? Oh, I was about to say, no, I'm done. I was about to say, no, Moss, my balls are gone. Or you know, I'm going to fight. I mean,
what, like, a weird scenario where, what, how many people are in that arena, you think?
Yeah, 15,000.
15,000 people are cheering about your testicles.
Not, well, it's half are cheering, half are booing.
And then they got USA chants going.
Incredibly cruel, but very funny. Cruel, but funny.
It's a new meme. Yeah. Like, make that a meme in MMA 2020.
Yeah, I'm not all about the nationality chants during fights, but I don't know. That might take the exception.
What other nationality chants do we get besides USA?
Oh, no.
There are none. It's only USA, and it's usually when, sometimes not even American fight. Like, it could be a Canadian versus a Brazilian, and they'll still just like chant USA for the white guy.
Has there been Esther? You're in the arena more than I am. Have there been like, you know, Brazil or Mexico chants? Like, actually just saying the name of the country?
No,
no.
No one chants Mexico, Mexico. They chant like,
yeah, sometimes.
Really? Yeah, I've never seen it in UFC or MMA, yeah, or boxing.
I've seen it.
You've heard. So, okay, so, but it's not in the regular, right? It's weird. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's weird. I never heard a Canada chant. Canada. It works.
Well, I don't know.
So, but basically, you asked about the ref coaching Struve, and our answer is more USA chants when opposing fighters get kicked in the balls. That's our answer.
There you go.
All right. Next question. This is from Valentino.
You just make it up.
Tarhan.
Just make up the spelling.
With the recent comments Colby has made about Dana and seeing Dana's response at the previous presser, I think if Colby loses to Usman, Dana will cut him. He seemed very mad. Colby has made more comments this week. Do you think they will release him? Big fan from Australia.
Six.
So the question was, is Colby going to get Liz Carmouched? Basically, lose the title fight, you're out. No.
I don't think, no way.
Colby, no way.
Colby Covington has carved himself in a niche that, love him or hate him, like, people are interested in what he has to say now. Like, he said himself that, so supposedly, what was the show he was on? He did like that sit-down interview.
Candace Owens.
And he said that before the Damian Maia fight, it was like his last on his contract, and the UFC wanted to cut him. They told him, like, win or lose, we're going to cut you. So then he started to do that stick, like, where he called Brazil a bunch of dirty animals or whatever you call them, and people called him racist, and that got him talking. And then the very next fight, he fought Rafael Dos Anjos, another Brazilian, and he had that boomerang thrown at him by Fabricio Verdum. So that promo got a lot of eyeballs on him.
There's absolutely zero chance the UFC actually said, if you win this fight, we're still going to cut you. It's just a zero chance that happened. And like, now we believe everything Colby says. Colby's still selling the fight. That's all he's doing. I mean, he even breaks kayfabe during
scrums, know,
all the time, which sucks because you're not supposed to do that. Come on, man.
When I saw that Candace Owens clip where he was talking about how, like, this, I did this like promo, whatever, all I could think of was Chael Sonnen getting upset for, like, what is it, pulling the curtain behind the business and stuff like that, breaking kayfabe. So, wasn't a fan of that. Even Henry Cejudo himself, Henry Cejudo has done that too, where he's like, I'm not this cringy. This is like me turned up. I'm like, don't say that. Make people believe. Like, live the gimmick. So, but it was a,
no, if
he, a steer into it.
So the question was, will Kobe get cut if he loses? No. No.
Absolutely not.
No, he won't get cut for his performance.
There's going to be.
Now, I mean, he may say something completely wrong, like just bad. Things you should not say. That may happen. But independent of the actual punching someone, nah, he's good for a while.
No way, yeah. Because there's a lot of fighters, like, people want to see him fight Masvidal. People want to see him fight. Unfortunately, if Ben Askren was not retired, I'm sure people would want to see him fight Ben Askren. There's people want Colby to see fight.
Dude, who knows what they've been at? If Colby gets his ass kicked and Ben's out there and they can throw some money at Ben, who the heck knows? That fight's still on the table. Ben's still on Earth. He didn't leave. You know, so we're good.
Well, he said he's getting hip surgery and he doesn't want to coach MMA anymore. Only Macy Barber. That's what Ben Askren said.
He doesn't want to coach
MMA? No. He's only going to do wrestling. He's not going to work with Rufus or anything. He's going to coach Macy Barber. That's about it.
If he gets a big bags of money, changes your thing. Changes your ideals.
That is true. That is for true. So.
Okay. From strike.mx. If Jose Aldo is able to win a belt at 135, big if.
The biggest if has ever been.
That's what it says, actually. It says big if. Oh. I didn't add that.
Sure. How big is the big if? I mean, did he, like, change the font? So, like,
cover. No, it's in parentheses.
It needs to be bigger.
Okay. Where would that put him in the all-time greats discussion? And will it help him recover from some of the damage that the Conor KO did to his legacy?
If Jose wins the bantamweight title, it would certainly... I already consider Jose Aldo one of the greatest fighters of all time.
It didn't destroy his legacy. He lost the fight. That's BS. Everyone lost. I mean, it's not saying destroy the legacy. It affected his legacy.
Sure.
Destroy his legacy. It's like, no.
Yeah, loss doesn't... Like, Ronda is still one of the... greatest fighters of all time, and she got head kicked and then knocked out in her next fight. Yeah, did it destroy? I think the actions after destroyed her legacy more than getting knocked out. But even then, that's not the end of the world. Like, Jose Aldo lost and he didn't make any.
What can destroy his legacy is the fact that we're reading this question. The fact that the greatest featherweight of all time is going to a weight class he should not be at, and he's facing probably the second best bantamweight in the world and a very violent bantamweight. And he's facing that guy and coming in as a skeleton. This weekend is going to have more effect on his legacy, I think, than anything else. I think it's almost like when BJ went down to 45 and, you know, started taking those horrible fights on there. Like, those started killing his legacy. It's like those losses in different weight classes afterwards. Those are going to hurt his legacy. This fight, if he doesn't make weight... Even if he does make weight gain, it just gets demolished by Marlon, whatever. We'll see what happens. This will affect his legacy much more than the Conor loss would.
Yeah, I have shades of, remember when Diego Sanchez went down to featherweight and he's like, I'm going to reinvent myself and this and that. And then he came up short when Thiago Alves tried to go down to lightweight on that New York card.
Even, you know, he fought when Diego went down to 45, he fought Ricardo Lamas, a guy who was in the top five at the time. Like, I just don't. This is incredible. These guys. He wasn't even a top five lightweight, and so he goes to featherweight and goes even higher in the ranking somehow. This is Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
And so I just. Jose Aldo. He just loses Volkanovski, who was ranked. He's like at the time ranked in the top five. Maybe he's, I guess, two now, whatever. But he's going down. So Aldo's going down a weight class and fighting a guy that's arguably higher in the rankings than his previous opponent.
Yeah.
So, like, now if Jose Aldo was coming down to 35 and facing, name a guy in the top 30.
Jimmy Rivera.
No, not even Jimmy Rivera. Jimmy Rivera's way too. I'm talking
like, Ricky Simone.
No. Whoever Ricky Simone beat in his third fight in UFC. Whoever that guy was.
Rana Yahya.
Rana Yahya. That's a good one.
All right. If he was just fighting Rana Yahya.
Yes. I'll be okay. I could see that, you know, just like as a test.
Mm-hmm.
But going against Marlon Moraes, You remember what Marlon Moraes did to, actually, remember the first round he did with Cejudo? Remember the last three fights that got him that title fight?
He was crumpling people.
Yeah.
He was melting people.
Melting people.
Like, if he fought, like, John Dodson at bantamweight. Like, I pulled up the top 15 at bantamweight. Like, Casey Kenney.
But I'm talking guys who, like,
are lower ranked. This stuff,
I'm talking about top, like, whoever's ranked number 30.
Okay.
And guys that we just can't think the name of right now. But
if he fought Brian Caraway.
Yeah, someone like that. Like, yeah. I would love him to fight a strong grappler, mm-hmm. like a Yaya Caraway. Like all the, there's so many 35ers. Like I watch a damn sport for a living. I can't think of any because like there's so many. You know.
But. Well, that's what Cody Stamann said in your scrum with I think it was the pre-fight media day scrum where he's like, I think outside of 155, 135 is the deepest class, and that's not because of talent, it's just more people look at 155 because it's like the average size human, but 135 is just as stacked as 155, he said. I don't know if I agree with that. I think 155 pounds is the most stacked division in the UFC. Featherweight's looking real great too right now, but bantamweight is way up there.
So there's a lot of fun to answer your question, Striker MX 69 cage warrior.
It won't affect his legacy at all.
If
he wins the championship 135 pounds, he's what is he going from the top 5-10 fighters of all time to like top 5 fighters of all time?
Wait, that's so distant, it's not even worth talking
about. I want to see if he makes weight first.
This loss and this weekend could affect his legacy more than the Aldo fight, I feel like.
I want it more than the McGregor fight.
What
you said, more than the Aldo fight.
Whatever I said.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want to see him make weight first because he's not looking great from those.
Even if he makes weight. I mean.
Well, I want to see if he makes weight. Like, say he makes weight and then he goes, I don't know if I can do this again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like Chris Cyborg always said this. Chris Cyborg said, I can make 135 pounds. I just can't show up and fight like Cyborg the next day.
Sure.
And I think Otto's going to make 100. I think he's going to make 135, 136. But it's how he looks Saturday night walking in that cage.
And if he fights Cejudo, he would have to be 135. And could his body handle 5 rounds after that weight cut? Because this is only a 3-round fight. Like, could his body handle that one extra pound going to 135 and 2 more rounds? It's a lot of questions.
Pay your $60 and watch it on pay-per-view to find out.
Conor McGregor's fighting 35 pounds heavier than him in his next fight. Good God. It's like thinking of Charlie Brennan and Anthony Johnson fought at like welterweight. Now one of them's a lightweight and one of them's now fighting heavyweight. Might fight Francis and Ngannou eventually.
Good for him.
All right. Mr. Brooks in the chat would like to know, if Holloway loses, does he get the immediate rematch?
I think so. I think it's warranted. Especially how we, if it depends on how we, if, well, I guess it would depend on how the fight plays out.
I don't think there's one way the fight can play out where he doesn't get a rematch.
What if he gets melted in 4 seconds?
Yeah, we'll get a rematch. Actually, if he gets melted in 4 seconds, he absolutely will get a rematch.
Why? Aldo didn't. He got melted in 13 seconds.
By who?
Conor.
Yeah, what do you think the C stands for on UFC?
That's fair.
Of course, yeah, Holloway absolutely gets a rematch. There's nothing that can happen in this fight that he won't get a rematch.
Unless he gets, well, if he
Cause, gets... Because who do we have back, who do we have following him?
Frankie and Korean Zombie fight in a couple weeks.
Nope. None of those sell more tickets or sells more pay-per-views than a Holloway rematch. Holloway can get grinded out for 25 minutes along the cage. And he'll still get a rematch. He can get knocked out in 2 seconds, he'll get a rematch.
I think he would also, because Max is...
Depending on Max's health.
That's what I was about to say, because remember at UFC 240 in Edmonton, someone asked him, like, when do you want to return? Because they asked him if he would want to fight Volkanovski on that Australia card. He goes, I want to get brain scans first. Yeah. So if he gets, like, crushed in this fight, and he goes, I need to take 12 months for my health.
But he'll still get a rematch once he's healthy.
Sure. But maybe Volkanovski takes in a fight.
Well, of course.
We could have a Ronda situation where Volkanovski fights someone and then he loses and then Max still gets... Or like Ronda never rematched Holly. She ended up fighting Amanda on her return because Holly lost to Misha and then Misha lost to Amanda and all that.
But I think the question is basically, if Holloway loses, well, his next fight he'll still be for the title. Unless there's some weight cutting issues where he goes up to 55 or something like that. But assuming all those are good Yeah,
unless he might not want to do featherweight ever again.
And the only reason Aldo didn't get a rematch at 45 is because of the Conor situation.
Yeah.
And when Conor's, was Conor's next, did Conor have to fight? Was it Frankie?
Never featherweight again.
No, I'm sorry. I get the name too.
Aldo? Aldo did. Yeah, the next fight he had was UFC 200.
Against Frankie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Aldo did get a direct rematch in a sense. Title, yeah, right? he came straight back for a title shot. So it was Conor that didn't accept it.
Right, because I think Conor wanted to fight Frankie. Oh. If Frankie had won, Conor would have fought Frankie at 145, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I think that's a fight Conor wishes he hadn't gotten at one point in his career. But that I don't know. I remember they were doing like the UFC did like a Twitter thing where Conor, this is before
he fought Aldo. No, remember at 200, Conor was there. He was like, he was standing
up. Oh, I know, but I'm saying if Frankie had beaten Aldo that fight, he would have fought at 145 again. He would have fought Frankie at 145.
Probably.
Yeah, I think definitely. Because if you look at that, he did like a thing before, even before the Aldo fight, where he did like the top 10 of the UFC, like what's like, give your reaction, everyone. And Frankie's like, he had something, he had like a promo on everyone in the top 15. And then when it got to Frankie's like, what can I say about Frankie? That dude's a legend.
Conor Nate 2 was 202, right?
Yeah, but that was a 170.
Okay. Yeah, I know that.
Are you thinking of Conor's timeline?
Yeah,
So he fought Dennis Seaver in Boston, and then he fought Aldo. Oh, no, then he fought Mendes at 189 in July. Then he fought Aldo in December at UFC 194. And then he was supposed to fight Rafael Dos Anjos 155 at 196. But then Dos Anjos fell with a broken foot, so he fought Nate at 170, Nate at 170, Eddie at 155, UFC 205. Took that long layoff, fought Mayweather in August, and then took another year-long layoff, and then fought Habib at 155.
Jeez, you're like president of this fan club.
I should know a lot about events.
Jeez.
He also fought Marcus Brimage in Sweden. He fought Max Holloway in Boston. Because Conor has a lot. Like, I was looking at this, and like the people were like, why does he fight Cerrone? Conor doesn't like fight. Like, Cerrone's a guy that won't pull out, right? He doesn't like, because he was, do you remember who he was supposed to fight instead of Max Holloway? Max Holloway was a late replacement.
Instead of Max. Oh, instead of Max.
Yeah, on that Boston card.
Who?
Andy Ogle. He was supposed to fight Andy Ogle on the prelims of the first ever FS1 card, and then a 20-year-old Max Holloway stepped up. And then this is...
Wait. So Max stepped up for two fights. Max stepped up for Poirier.
Yep.
And for...
Conor.
I don't know. And then
the next fight Conor had, because remember he blew his knee out? He was supposed to return against Cole Miller in Dublin. And then he had nerve damages, and he fought Diego Brandão instead. And then he was supposed to fight Aldo, and he fell out. And he was supposed to fight Rafael Dos Anjos, and he fell out. So Conor's had a lot of late replacements.
So what you're saying is Cerrone will get injured.
And he'll still show up.
No, if you're injured, he ain't showing up.
That, maybe. Well, Conor apparently had his ACL shredded, and he still showed up.
He wasn't even motivated. He wasn't even focused.
I know.
Jeez, imagine if he's motivated and focused, right? Guys.
Come on. His foot was a balloon.
Yeah. Imagine if he has a structured camp.
I think Owen Roddy said it was refined. Yeah. For that one pizza guy. Anyway, next. What's we got? Any other fun questions?
In the chat, Jorge Washington would like to know, Dana said that if Conor wins, he gets the next title shot. I'm going to go off Conor here since we're still talking about him.
Conor's
He gets the next title shot. But so who does Justin Gaethje fight next? Winner, Felder, Hooker, or just... Does Justin just sit out until next year?
I think Conor is going to fight Masvidal if he wins, and then Gaethje could fight the winner of Habib, Tony. Who knows? But if I'm Justin Gaethje, like, there's really no one, unless he is itching to return. Like, right now, Francis Ngannou is the rightful number one contender at heavyweight, so he could sit out and pull the Tyron Woodley thing after he beat Kelvin. He sat out for a year. Or, like, when Ricardo Lamas, I think, beat Eric Koch and sat out for a year and then fought Aldo in New Jersey. He could do that, but if he wants to fight... He could fight the winner of
Justin Gaethje has to do whatever the UFC and Conor wants him to do. That's what's going to happen. Justin Gaethje wants to fight for the title. Don't matter if the UFC doesn't want it to happen or if Conor beats Cerrone. Conor's getting it. It's up to them. It's not up to Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, I'm not.
That's what I'm saying. Of course, Justin should be fighting for the title next. Of course, but
yeah. But, like, also the timeline just doesn't line up. Because, like, when's that fight, that Habib-Ferguson fight? Is April. So then, when was the fight in Vancouver? Is that September? So his last fight was September. So then Habib fights in April. He probably won't fight again until November or December. So that'd be more than a year layoff for Justin Gaethje if he waits for a title shot. And that's if Habib wins. Like, if Tony Ferguson wins, why wouldn't they want to run that back? Exactly. Like, Justin Gaethje's going to have to... If he wants to fight, like, who can he fight?
I don't think he wants to fight. I think he wants to fight for that title. And he'll wait it out.
You remember when, at the Dominance MMA Media Day, he says he wants to fight Khabib more than he wants to fight for the title. Because he wants to test himself against Khabib. So if
Tony... No, yeah, but he's saying that under the assumption that if Tony just steamrolls Khabib, you think Justin Gaethje is going to get on Michael? I still want to fight the guy that got his ass kicked. No.
Well, what I'm saying
is... It's easy to say that at the time when the guy's unstoppable.
What I'm saying is say Tony Ferguson beats Khabib, and then they want to, like, make Tony versus Conor, why not make Gaethje versus Khabib?
Because
both of them want fights
because
and they don't give them rematches.
Because that should be... Gaethje's not going to take it because I think Gaethje has a little bit of pride in the sense that, wait, I have to... The guy I demolished loses again, and that guy gets in front of me. I mean, let's say it's...
Money talks, man. They could give him a lot of money to fight Khabib.
Which they're not.
I don't know that.
You know, you think they're going to give him championship money for a non-championship fight?
I don't know.
The UFC.
Probably not.
Yeah. Justin Gaethje is going to be... We might not see Justin Gaethje for a while. That's what I think.
I hope not. What if it's in Russia, and they're like, we'll give you a lot of money to go fight Khabib?
If they pay him championship money, yeah, he'll fight. He's a prize fighter. He is a prize fighter. You know, he wants bags of money. That's what they're doing this for. So if they pay him championship money, yeah, he'll take it.
And for all we know, that April fight could fall out again for the fifth time. And Justin Gaethje fills in for one of them anyway. Maybe he fights in April for the interim title.
So that's what Justin Gaethje's relying on, is someone getting hurt.
Well, he said
that's his career.
He said he would serve as a backup under the right circumstances, which is obviously money. Yeah.
And this is also under the assumption, we have no idea if Khabib would accept a fight against someone completely stylistically different.
Yeah, he for sure would. He for sure would. Like, he 100% would, because remember when all that nonsense happened with UFC 223 and they go, why are you fighting Ale Quinta on 2 days' notice? He goes, if you're a good fighter, you can beat anyone at any time. Like, I don't care when my opponent changed. Like, this was when they did the press conference and did the stare down with those two. He goes, it could have been Al, it could have been Pettis, it could have been Felder. Doesn't matter. Like, if I think I'm the best, I should be able to beat anyone at any time. So I think if anyone, Khabib would for sure take that fight. Just because he's done in the past and he said he would do it.
I don't believe it.
All right. I'm just saying, if Khabib is headlining a pay-per-view, if Tony gets hurt again and Khabib's headlining a card in Brooklyn, you think Khabib's going to pull himself out of that Brooklyn card? No way.
But that card against Al?
No way. No, I'm saying, like, because the next fight against Tony Ferguson is also in Brooklyn. So if Tony Ferguson gets hurt, you think he's going to turn out Justin Gaethje and pull out of that card? No way. Khabib's going to stay on that card no matter what.
We don't know that.
I'm pretty confident. If I'm wrong, if you're wrong, I don't know. Shave your mustache.
Ooh.
Dems the brakes. Because I'm in.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just do one more Conor question because it's in here.
I don't think that makes a fighter more badass at all.
I'm not talking about badass.
Yeah, I don't need to train for a particular guy.
Oh no, really, I'm not saying if it's badass or not. I'm saying there's like something to go off of that Khabib's done that in the past, so there's nothing to say that he wouldn't do it again.
All right.
Paladin Boza in the chat actually has an interesting question, which is, does Conor retire if Cowboy destroys him?
No.
No.
No. If he loses, he's going to do the Nate trilogy. Me and Petey are both in agreement. Because I did the A-side with Petey a few weeks ago, and he said the same thing. He goes, if Cowboy beats Conor, then he's going to retire. I'm like, no, he's going to take the Nate rematch, the Nate trilogy. They're both coming off losses. What other fight? Like, obviously, Conor's a big name no matter what, but that would be two losses in a row. He would have lost three or four of his last MMA fights. If you're including the Mayweather fight, that means he lost four of his last five fights. At the end of the day, like, Conor's a big draw, but you have to win. And the Nate fight is a big fight. And they're both coming off losses. And they're not going to give him Jorge coming off a loss. They're not going to give him a title shot coming off a loss. So what's the next biggest fight you could have coming off a loss? And that's the Nate trilogy. So I think if he loses, he does the Nate trilogy. He loses to Nate, then he retires. But if he beats Nate, then he keeps going on.
Okay, let's...
He just fights wherever the money is.
Sure,
Nate,
but I think...
Nate, if he loses, obviously the Nate is the most obvious one.
And it's the biggest fight he could take.
Yeah,
it's the
most obvious one. Yeah, he might go... I don't know, he might do a stupid boxing match. I don't know.
Like, again,
might do Conor Floyd again. Yay.
I don't know.
Conor.
Okay, no. Let's switch it.
switch back to this week. Diego Junquedello, or
Junquedea? Say it correctly.
I don't know. Jeez. I can't tell. I don't know if he's Brazilian or... Okay, sorry. Where does Leon Scott... Oh, I think he means Edwards.
Yeah.
Where does Leon Edwards fit into the title picture after Covington Usman this weekend?
He needs a fight first. Supposedly, the UFC wants him to fight Tyron Woodley in the main event of UFC London, but Tyron Woodley doesn't want that fight. Well, he doesn't want the fight in London.
That's what he says.
Right.
That's all. Whenever guys are saying ridiculous, they're like, oh, I just go to London for vacations. It's like that. All that's saying is like, hey, UFC, throw me some more money. That's all that is.
Yeah, so I like that fight, Leon Edwards and Tyron Woodley. I think it makes sense, but if Tyron Woodley doesn't take it, then I don't know who. I'm looking at the welterweight rankings right now. I already beat Rafael Dos Anjos, Damian Maia is there. Santiago Ponzinibbio doesn't have a fight, but he just got hurt. Steven Thompson broke his hand, so he's going to be on the show for a while. He's not going to fight Nate. Pettis is going back to lightweight. Robbie Lawler, he was supposed to fight Ponzinibbio, but then Ponzinibbio fall out of this card, and so then Lawler pulled out. Vicente Luque is taking time off, and then that's all the way going down to 13, and then there's Magny and Jeff Neal. I think the only one I would like to see him fight is Ponzinibbio if the Woodley fight doesn't happen.
Whatever happens for Leon Edwards, he's probably...
He's just lost in the shuffle right now.
He has to demolish someone. That's all that.
He has to look Corey Anderson.
Yeah, he has to demolish someone. He has to say ridiculous shit on the mic, and then maybe he'll get his title shot. That's all.
I don't think he's going to leapfrog anyone at welterweight.
Unless he says ridiculous crap.
I guess.
Unless he just, like, Colby wins, Leon Edwards knocks out Woodley, he grabs an American flag, smashes it, says, this is for, we're coming back.
What if he does it to the Cuban flag and calls out Masvidal? Because they already have that three. He's part of the three-piece in Minnesota history.
I think if things go crazy, Masvidal Edwards is more likely than Edwards getting a title shot.
Yeah, I don't think Edwards is getting a title shot anytime soon.
For no real reason other than that he doesn't move the needle enough.
No, he also has only fought in the U.S. twice? He's always on those early morning cards. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a good fighter.
Same with Volkanovski. He's only fought in the U.S. once, right?
That was 232 in Mendes. Inglewood. That's right.
That's the only time he fought.
No, yeah, you're right. I keep thinking he was on that Boise card, but that was Chad Mendes on the Boise card. Yeah, you're right.
I did when I was doing his timeline video, I was like, oh, he's only fought in the States once.
And this is his first time in Vegas. Well, it's going to be his first time in Vegas.
That's right. Yeah, like,
Boise. He was on that Boise fight card.
Well, no.
He did fight Darren Elkins.
No, but no one was there. Those don't count.
You mean
I'm talking pay-per-views. Like, fight nights don't count. They really don't.
You mean you didn't tune in to watch JDS, Blagoj, Ivanov, and Sage Northcutt versus Zach Otto?
That was the only fight I tuned in for. I didn't bother watching
that. That was the Nico Price hammer fist off the back.
Jeez, okay.
All right. Just remember.
No one remembers Boise.
I do. No one remembers Boise.
I do.
Casey, you don't say that.
No one but Boise in a corner.
Who else was on that card? Rick Flynn was on. Split decision.
All right. Actually, I looked it up. His name is Leon Scott Edwards.
Is that really his middle name?
I don't know if it's really his real name, but like it's kind of everywhere. I can't tell if it's just like a joke.
Someone called him. I think Colby called him Leon Scott, or Masvidal called him. Some welterweight called him Leon Scott as like a joke, and then it just people.
It's a joke.
Yes. It's like when people call Kamaru Marty. It's because Ben Askren said it so much.
Yeah.
I don't remember who said it, but I see it a lot.
Yes.
Because when I say Leon Edwards, people in the chat are like, who's Leon Edwards? And people are like, Leon Scott. Oh, now I know.
That's called comedy.
Yes. Yes. Apparently it's called comedy. When you
say someone's name, that's not really their name.
Yep. Yep. Okay.
Cha cha cha.
Good answer, Lester.
ELC would like to know who you are picking in Dranomy Nunes and Max Volkanovski.
It's hard to pick against Amanda. So I think
if Amanda keeps it standing, then of course it's a toss up fight. If Amanda uses her wrestling, takes her down,
I think that's
good. Then obviously it's a higher probability to victory.
I think that's I would if I'm a betting man, I would put Amanda by submission.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, but let's see what happens. But, if it's on the feet,
Shit, who knows?
She tapped her in the first fight, right?
Dude, have you rewatched that first fight? Mm-hmm. I remember watching that, and I was a big JDR fan coming to that fight.
GDR.
There he's a junior. GDR. And she looked so bad in that fight.
Amanda or Jermaine?
Jermaine.
Okay.
She looked so bad. I thought that was the last time we were ever going to see her fight in a high-level really? Fight. She got taken down, just basically looked like she quit. And she was out for almost a year and a half after that. And her follow-up victory, I can't remember who she won against, but she won her follow-up, Larissa Pachenko, a good prospect at the time, way too young to be in the UFC, but that's another, she's doing very good in PFL right now. But she came back and she basically said, my mentality, my training was just completely off in the past for those fights. I'm a different woman, I'm a different person now, I'm a different fighter, and I see it. And so I believe in her now, but I remember coming out of that Nunes fight, the first one, I was like, oh, she is just done. Like, she doesn't want to be here. And she admitted, and actually I was kind of happy, at least she admitted, she confirmed my suspicion. She did say a year later, yeah, I was just not in the right.
Well, that dropped a record of 4-3. And since then, she's only fought once a year. She fought 2015, 16, 17, 18. So this is her first year with two fights since 2013. That's wild. I didn't know. I knew she was fairly inactive because remember when we were at that Denver fight, she said she injured her eye and she was going through a lot. She cried during the press conference.
She had broken hands. She had to get eye surgery.
Well, she thought she was going to lose her eye.
Lose her eye from a freak accident.
Yeah.
What's your timeline to find out what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nunes should win, but if Jermaine knocks her out, I wouldn't be shocked. Now, if Jermaine takes her down and submits Nunes, that would be very shocking.
I'll ask you this now, because at UFC 239, when Amanda was fighting Holly, a lot of people were calling Amanda the greatest fighter, female fighter of all time, leading that fight. And you were very adamant that she was not there yet. You still put Ronda number one. After the Holly Holm fight, do you put Amanda the greatest fighter, female fighter of all time now?
I think this version of Amanda is the greatest mm-hmm. we've seen in her cage. This version of Amanda. Now, I still have issues doing the whole, is she the greatest fighter of all time? Because she's had Amanda's had lots of bad fights. She's had lots of mediocre fights. She's lost to mid-level fighters and stuff. So like, there's almost different eras in Amanda's career. But this version, the last like 5-6 years of Amanda Nunes, because Amanda Nunes has been doing this for what, 10 years now? Like the first 5 years of her career were very hit or miss. Mm-hmm. This last 4 years, I think after the Katsangano loss, mm-hmm. has she been undefeated after Katsangano? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That fight, like much like when Jermaine lost to Amanda Nunes previously, she came back a different fighter. That Katsangano loss, Nunes came back as it because before Nunes had lost because she got grinded out by wrestlers, got taken down, eventually got tired and submitted. But Kat just beat the crap out of her.
Do you remember that fight? She got full mount on Kat in the first round. And then she got like tossed in the second and third round before she got just TKO'd.
Demolished from the top, yeah.
Yeah. But so, then since then she's beaten a lot of good fighters.
It'd be a lot of good fighters very violently too. Very violently and quickly.
TKO. The only
So I just think Amanda Nunes, this era Amanda Nunes is the best female fighter we've seen at bantamweight ever. What am I talking about? Like, is this version still better than Ronda when Ronda was just freaking, I don't know.
I think her level of competition since the Zingano fight is slightly higher than Ronda's level of competition. During her tear through, like she fought,
I would agree. Yeah, I think
Alexis
Davis,
Betch Gohea, Sarah McMahon, like the two Misha Tate fights were good, but like,
I think they're both 1A, 1B.
But like Amanda's KO'd Cyborg, TKO'd like Rousey, submitted Tate, beat Valentina twice. She does have that win over Julia Budd in Strikeforce. She has a win over NXT Women's Champion Shayna Baszler, so that's another champion she's beat.
But if you go back and watch this Alexis Davis fight, mm-hmm. watch that Sarah D'Elia fight, and like it's kind of like, wow, you're kind of like, this woman isn't the best fighter in the world. It's kind of there was like glimmers like, oh, she's a brawler, but that's about it.
Wasn't she training
TT as well?
Yeah, wasn't she training in New Jersey back then?
She was at MMA Masters, which is another camp in Florida. I think I know Ricardo Lamas is part of them. There's a few other, I think, Ricardo Josh.
Yeah, obviously going ATT is.
that like, yeah, life changing. Yeah, I'm not sure when she went to ATT. It might have been after the cat fight, or
I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, her camp change off to ATT was definitely brought out her
and full potential. And since her cat fight, the only two decisions she's had were against Valentina, and one of them was split. A lot of people think she lost.
Okay, I want to go one more question for this, and then I want to actually we have got a lot of DC questions. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Who is the most likely to lose their belt this weekend?
Kamaru.
Yeah, Kamaru. Because I think
I'm picking Kamaru, but I think of all the,
That's the closest competitively. Volkanovski has a real good chance of beating Max.
Of course, but I think all three of them. That's why sure.
It's a great fight. Yeah, I agreed. We could see three title changes. Like I think the only time that's happened is UFC 217. That was when TJ beat Cody, GSP beat Bisping, and Rose beat Joanna. We could see that again on Saturday, but if.
Remember, Joanna was a heavy favorite too going in.
Yeah, she was. She got crushed. Those three stoppages too. But I do agree with you. I think I'm actually picking Colby in that fight. I think that's like a toss up for me. Like who wins that one?
I'm picking Kamaru, but Colby might surprise me.
Yeah.
All right, let's switch to the DC card. People are asking about Francis Ngannou since. Him and Biggie Boy might have a...
Jairzinho Rosenstreich.
Yes.
Tim Crystal.
Do you think that that's going to be the next bout?
I sure hope so. Francis Ngannou should fight him or Volkov.
I don't want that fight because I want both those guys... I want both those guys to have title shots.
Sure.
That's so fair. That's the problem. We knock out... when number one contenders knock each other out, then you don't have multiple contenders.
Who should they fight? Because
I mean, obviously, if In a vacuum, yeah, of course I want them to fight. Mm-hmm. I want to see that fight every weekend. But from a matchmaker's point of view, I don't know how much sense that makes to take out two number one contenders. I mean, take out a number one contender when both those guys.
I guess the thing is, DC has already said that the fight his trilogy against Stipe will most likely be in the summer because they're both healing up, which means Francis would have had to his last fight was July. Which he would have had to wait a year, and then he would have to wait another like X amount of months for a title shot. If he wants to stay busy, and Jairzinho said he wants to return March or April, maybe in summer, why not book that fight on the same card as Stipe DC? Because DC's pulled out of fights before, like just have one of them stand by for. Plus, if DC wins and he retires, his next fight is gonna be for the vacant heavyweight championship of the world.
Cool.
And then put Francis Jairzinho would then be on the same timeline. Because they both fought on the same card. I think that makes sense. It's similar to when GSP fought Hendricks and on the main card was Lawler McDonald, and then when they vacated, Hendricks and Lawler fought because they had both were on the same timeline. I'd like that idea.
Like I said, if it's in a vacuum, yeah, of course you should fight. But the problem is for Francis is like you take for him. I bet in his mind he thinks Biggie Boy is a tougher fight than
Volkov
or whoever. Whoever might be fighting for a title. So it's just such a high-risk fight for not that much money and compared to a title fight. So
who would he... Because Junior is now fighting Curtis Blaydes, but Francis has already beaten Blaydes twice. Derek Lewis is fighting Ilir Latifi. And then after that, Jairzinho is the next man up. It's him or Volkov. They're 5-6.
Wait, why is Derek Lewis fighting Ilir Latifi?
Don't know.
He's a number five ranked heavyweight is fighting a completely unranked guy. And he's not fighting like a former title challenger, and he's fighting a 205er, I don't know, journeyman.
Yeah,
like that fight is actually just makes from a ranking perspective.
Like if
Ilir
Latifi wins, he's gonna jump up to like number six right away.
Well, of course, if Ilir Latifi fought Daniel Cormier, he beats Daniel Cormier. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, of course he's gonna jump up.
But I'm saying like if you want to make a number one contender fight, like the only one that would make sense that they're not booked are Jairzinho and Francis, or Volkov, like any one of those three. Because unfortunately, Overeem just lost to Rosenstreich. Walt Harris isn't gonna fight anytime soon, and then after that, you have a bunch of fighter names that I can't pronounce.
Still got Anthony Johnson in there. You still got a bunch of other 205ers who might go up in weight. All of a sudden, they're I don't know. Like, yeah, you still got John Jones. He might just take a, they throw a bunch of money at him.
Ngannou, Rozenstruik, and or Ngannou, Volkov, and Jairzinho, Rumble Johnson.
What was the question?
What do you think about that fight?
Yeah, it's cool. I actually don't think it's gonna happen.
It could. What if it turns into another Lewis and Ngannou though, where they're both just like dumb shots?
Well, there was a series of unfortunate events that led to that. Same, unless both fighters are coming in there injured and they literally need a paycheck, then because people forget that
Derek Lewis was hurt.
Derek Lewis, if that fight was against any other heavyweight in the world outside of Derek Lewis, who went in there and literally, I can't do anything more than this, and he just looked tough. Like, that was the reason. And so that was the reason there was no action. So if anyone comes at Francis, like, you would have woken up. You know, you have to kind of hit him and he wakes up. But if you're never going to hit him, he just kind of. That was just a. It was a series of unfortunate events that led to that fight.
But then it led to Mark Raimondi doing a shoey. So it all worked out in the end.
And I still have issues with that shoey, because shoeys are celebrations and they made the shoey a punishment.
Yeah, but it was a celebration for Sean.
It was a celebration of the people around Mark, not for actually Mark.
Did you spin it? I can't remember.
Yeah, he's been in it. He's a man. Right. He's a man.
Mark is a man. Any other fun questions? Oh, we got
kids. Yeah, we got a good question, actually. Well, also about DC, sort of. From Luis, or Baby Yoda Jr.
I still have not seen that show, so.
Yeah, it's a video game.
Since there's been so much talk about testicles getting smashed on recently, what is the worst hit to the balls y'all have had?
Personally?
You spar a lot more than me.
I got whacked in the balls right before I came up to Vegas. Yeah, I was wrestling, and he went for a single, but then he switched legs, I always wear a cup, no matter what. I always wear a cup, we're doing some light wrestling today. I'm going to be a little lazy and not spend that freaking 30 seconds to put my cup on. Of course, his hand comes right up the middle, and it barely, man, when it comes up underneath, oh, good Lord. It's like, it's a different feel. And it's one of those feels, you got the takedown, and I was all like, oh, you hit me. I was kind of murmuring, oh, you hit me in my dick. And then, like, I was trying to play it off, but I was like, but then it just starts hurting more and more and more. And then, like, by about 15 seconds later, I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. So it kind of starts here and moves up. It's an interesting feel. But then once I actually stopped, when you kind of stopped and kind of, I was trying to rest, then it kind of, I got it. You know, when you see fighters, like, they get hit in the balls and, like, they go, oh, go to the corner, and they kind of sit there for a while, and then they start going, ooh. Yeah, because it's when you stop moving, that's when it kind of starts building up. I was actually told by a fighter, he told me, whenever you get kicked in the dick, either you take the whole 5 minutes, or you immediately go back out there and fight. That's why you often see fighters, you know, they get kicked in the dick, and they kind of take a couple seconds, and they go, I'm good to go. And you hear, like, DC or Rogan go, take your 5 minutes. But when I talked to these guys said the only way for that pain to go away is to have another man try to kill you, because your body can only really concentrate on one type of pain, you know?
Sure.
So, like, if I can't worry about my balls because I got fucking Francis Ngannou about to fucking rip my face off. So, So yesterday, that's when I got hit in the balls.
That was a lot of language for our youth listeners. They got to learn something.
I thought that's important information. Testicle talk.
Is that it? Replace crystal talk?
Yeah, testicle talk.
All right, team testicle, team crystal. My answer would be one of the many times I was playing shortstop in baseball growing up.
During a game or just fielding or whatever?
Like, so when I in Rhode Island, when I was coming up playing
baseball. What do you call it? You call it practice?
Yeah, baseball practice.
You just got practice? Okay, yeah, you don't say like fight practice.
Yeah, just fight camp, baseball practice.
Okay.
You're not, like, you have practice every day.
It's not baseball. It's like, you don't go to baseball training.
You go to training camp to, like, work on, like, hitting and stuff. But, like, a practice is, like, in-game scenarios.
Yeah, but we don't go fight. We call it fight practice.
Yeah, but right. MMA is not sports, entertainment. So, in Rhode Island, baseball starts in the March when the grass is still frozen. So, you get a lot of those weird skips off of frozen grass. That's the answer.
Are you wearing a cup?
Yeah.
It still
hurts.
Still, oh, yeah, I'm sure. Have you? Okay, yeah. Okay, we're good.
Okay, yeah. Let's not go on to testicle talk forever. Dinosaurus.
But no, but I feel every fan needs to get hit in the balls once to understand.
That's Casey's job. If you see Casey about, just be like, Casey, I watched the A-side, Casey will just run up and kick you.
Yeah, and I'm like, boo.
Or like, I don't know.
I would kick you in the nuts and chant USA. That's the only time I'm going to chant USA.
Do you like the professional wrestling one where you just hit him with the
arm? Right from behind? Yeah. That's what I got hit with, basically. Like the arm, because he was going under, the arm came right up under. It's like, ooh.
Did he boo you?
Yeah.
All right.
Good question. Good question, whatever person.
Okay, Denisaurus would like to know, how does Bellator do a welterweight tournament and have MVP not fight anyone from the tournament? I get building a guy back up, but seriously, he's 32 and shouldn't be considered a prospect anymore. How are we supposed to take him seriously fighting your local mailman?
Have you seen the clicks he gets?
He does really well.
He does really well fighting. Not nobody. He fights C-level fighters, guys who aren't quite ready for the big show, but they're clearly trained martial artists. They're not explode fight series guys. Like he's fighting athletes. He's fighting fighters, but obviously he's not fighting the elite guys.
I was at the Douglas Lima fight because that was the same day.
You saw that in person.
That was the same day as the Rose Jessica Andrade fight. So you guys were all working that fight, and I was on Bellator duty. I don't know. Have you watched that fight since? Or do you remember anything about that fight besides the finish?
It was the second round, right?
It was the second round, but MVP was finding a lot of success on the feet in the first round, and then when he got taken down, he had wrist control the entire time. Where even though he was on his back, I still gave it to MVP the first round. Like Douglas Lima literally couldn't do anything from the top. Like he would try and, because MVP's arms are so long that Douglas Lima would go to punch and MVP could just grab his wrist and he was controlling him the whole time. And then the second round, I asked him this. I go, why did you get up that way? Like instead of rolling back, he just stood up and went forward. And he goes, I was finding so much success on the feet that I just got overconfident and thought I could just stand up. Well, when you get knocked down, you're kind of trying to like go back. But he literally looked like he just tripped and just was standing up from the sidewalk and then just got like right hooked from hell. So he goes, if I just rolled back, I could have won that fight. But that's a lot of what ifs. But he was looking really – he was doing really well in that fight until he got knocked out.
I believe he was on his way to losing a decision,
sure,
but a competitive decision.
Yes.
A competitive
decision. A lot of people were going to say he was going to get crushed by Douglas Lima, which he did because of his own mistake. But I think if he didn't get knocked out then and it was a decision, it would have been competitive.
That's MMA. MMA is all about who makes the first mistake. It really is. That's all MMA is. Like who fucks up first. And that was we're always taught when you get up, basically, you never get up like that. What he did, it's kind of shocking he got up that way. You just don't ever do that. That's why the knockouts look so incredibly unique, because we've never seen anything like that before at a high level, because at a high level, you just never get up off your butt straight up like that.
He overextended, he got his legs kicked out from under him, and then went forward.
And he just kind of got up like that instead of...
Didn't protect his head.
Yeah, put your butt down, get back, hand out. It's like...
I want to see...
No, but
that fight again. I would like to see MVP fight Rory or anyone else from the tournament, like this commenter said. Because now he's fighting in Bellator Japan, right?
Yeah, and he's fighting a decent journeyman guy. He was 2-2 in UFC. A lot of experience. Everyone's like, who is this guy? He's like, he's a decent dude. And he's like, this is the guy that we'll be fighting on a fight night prelims. You'll be like, oh, let's watch this. It's not a scrub. He's a talented dude.
I want to see him fight Rory McDonald. And if he wins, beats Roy, then I want to see the rematch against Lima. Because right now, Lorenz Larkin probably has the next title shot against Douglas Lima. But I would like to see MVP fight Roy.
Who else is out there?
Neiman, Ed Ruth, Koreshkov. Benson Henderson can always jump up to 170.
Benson versus MVP sounds like a fun fight.
Yeah, Chandler could jump up to 170.
Yeah.
Gegard Mousasi could drop down to 170, probably. No.
No, I don't want
to
see that.
I don't want to see that either, but.
What was the question? Oh, why isn't he fighting one of those guys in the tournament? Yeah, give him some time. Oh, the answer was clicks. That's why. MVP.
Question, actually. Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you. Anthony Williams asked MVP versus Raymond Daniels. Is Raymond Daniels a welterweight or a middleweight?
Actually, I think he's a watch weight. I think he's a watch weight. But Ray Manero, he's been very unsuccessful in MMA. So unless they want to do it in kickboxing, yeah,
cool. He's 1-1 in MMA.
Yeah, he essentially retired from MMA.
He's welterweight, yeah. He hasn't fought MMA since... Well, he fought in May 2019, and that was his first fight since...
Oh, never mind. I guess... Oh, he is giving it a shot. Never
Bellator
mind.
Birmingham.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Ray Manero's fought in Bellator?
Yeah, that's...
Oh.
That is why we're bringing it up.
I had no idea.
You mean you didn't tune in to watch Brent Primus versus Tim Wilde?
No,
he
I
won,
didn't.
Brent Primus won by Gogolplot in that fight. Do you no. not remember that?
Is he on the main card?
Yeah, he's the opener. He won by KO.
Huh. All right, cool. Yeah, make it happen.
Okay. All right, this is probably going to be the last question.
Okay, good.
From John Baltz.
Hey, John Baltz.
Rank your top 3 years of the decade in MMA. Oh, actually, it's two questions. And the second question is Tiger's Eye or Peridot? Is it Peridot or Peridot?
That's a good question. I've heard both.
Okay. Well,
Tiger's Eye to answer because Tiger's Eye looks... Have you seen Tiger's Eye?
Yeah.
Have you seen Tiger's Eye?
What are you talking
it's
about?
Like a, it's a crystal. Come on. It's a crystal. It's another word for testicle. Now, oh. See, yeah, see? Tiger's Eye is a crystal that looks like wood.
Is that what I nicknamed my testicles?
Yeah. So Tiger's Eye to answer the crystal question because I like how it looks like wood and you can't really tell unless you feel it. Best year? Like personally or like fight-wise? I like 2013 because that's when I first got into it. I had just graduated college.
I think, fights.
Yeah. I'm just telling you like the story. Like Ronda fought, debuted. Chris Weidman beat Anderson that year. Anderson broke his leg. GSP came back, fought Johnny Hendricks. So 2013 stands out. That's my answer.
Turn your mic on, Esther.
Yes, what?
No.
Do you have a...
Let's discuss this.
Let's discuss this.
We've spent the entire decade together
working on
MMA.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, yeah. In October was our 10th year anniversary of working for MMA fighting.
Yeah.
So, 2013 was a really good year,
yeah.
Actually, because it also had...
Was
that Wyman?
Both Wyman Andersons. Ronda came on the scene.
I got bad memories for that in a personal reason.
You know, that was probably one of the better years.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I feel like all the strong years were kind of early on.
That was also 2013 was like the last year we had Kane as like a dominant force because he beat Junior both times.
Oh, I know why 2013. It stuck in my mind too. It was the last Strikeforce event for me.
Yeah, that's a good. That's another really good.
Yeah, point. Actually, if you want me to pick a year, it was when Strikeforce was probably right when Strikeforce maybe got bought out by Zuffa, but kind of like right before that era.
So like
right before that time.
2012, 2013.
Yeah, that was
2011 was a good year because it was also
when John Jones beat Shogun.
Right.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 2011. Everything after that was downhill.
And that was also when they had the big event in Toronto.
That's right. That's also the year Anderson front kicked Vitor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Gray Maynard Frankie
trilogy.
The two matches. That was a good year.
What year was Invicta 3? FC 3?
I think it was 2012.
That long? No. Right? 2012. Invicta? 2012?
Invicta 3? I'll find out.
Yeah.
Invicta 4. Invicta 3, Invicta 4, Invicta 5.
Invicta 4 was in 2013 as well. Actually, it was January 4th, 2013, I think.
For the decade?
Wait, hold on.
Invicta 3 was 2012.
Oh, yeah, wow. See, there
Invicta
you go.
4 was 2013.
So 2013 might be my favorite year, actually.
Yeah, so the three of us are kind of... Also, 2011 was the first ever Fox card.
Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So
that's when, in the first couple of years, Fox cards really mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the... Was the second one? Was the second Fox card the...
That was the Chicago one.
That was Phil Davis, Rashad.
It was loaded on paper. Sonnen. It just the fights wind up kind of being, you know, not entertaining, but they were on paper.
That was Maia's last middleweight fight when he lost to Weidman.
Yeah.
And then he dropped down and fought, what, Dong-Yong Kim at 148? Or did he fight Eric? I can't remember. Or Rick Story, one of those. It was one of those fights.
Yeah, so whatever. 2011, 2012, 2013. After that...
Actually, that was kind of, I think about it a lot. I feel like it was kind of the golden age,
mm-hmm.
Between like 2009 and, you know, basically from like UFC 100 to
whatever.
That's also like Anderson and GSP were the greatest. Like Fedor was still doing things. Yeah. DJ, young John Jones was had not gone into his shenanigans yet. He was that was 2011 though.
That was John Jones saving people on the streets of Patterson, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was still staying up late and watching fights from Japan.
Yeah. HDNet was still had it going.
2011 John Jones that. I think it's like the 2007. When was that Pride Grand Prix that Shogun won? Was that 2005?
Yeah, that was.
So that for me was the greatest year for a single fighter until John Jones 2011. Yeah. He beat Bader, Shogun, Rampage, and Machida all in 12 months. Like those two to me, like no one has matched yet.
No. Yeah, I agree. That was the best. That was the best.
And he was winning like he tapped. He crushed Shogun. Tapped Bader, tapped Rampage, and then left Machida in a heap. Damn good fights.
If you could, this is actually my last question because it's been an hour, but I wanted to ask, what's your favorite event of the last decade?
162 was cool. That was Weidman Anderson because that had not a lot of good fights on that card. Frankie fought Charles Oliveira. Tim Kennedy debuted against Hodger Gracie. 157 was fun. That was Ronda Carmouche, but then also had like Machida Hendo, and they had what was it, Mac Grice or whatever his name is against Dennis Bermudez. That was a fun one. I liked that Fox card. Was it UFC on Fox 7 in San Jose, which was Benson Gilbert. Had a lot of stoppages because it was a West Coast show in the summer, so we got out of the arena at like 9 p.m.
Gilbert won that.
And then people booed Benson Henderson during his
proposal to his girl when he just won a very controversial decision. And he proposed to his girl in his opponent's hometown area. Yeah. That's just kind of, come on, man.
UFC 189, I think a lot of people consider the greatest main card ever. That was the Conor Mendez because it had two flying knees, Gunnar Nelson tapping, the greatest fight ever. As the co-main event, yeah. And then Conor Mendez, because that prelim wasn't that great outside of the Matt Brown Tim Means fight. 194 was good. That was the Conor Aldo, Weidman, Rockhold, Holloway, Stevens, Romero, Jacare. 205 was good. That was stacked. That was the first NXT card. Yeah, there was a lot of good ones. I'd say 162 for me, just because I was like 10 feet away from Anderson getting knocked out. That was just crazy to see.
We've got a couple votes for 189.
Yeah.
But yes. All right. I think that's it for today. We got to head over to the...
One real quick one. Okay. What do you think is the knockout of the year?
This year?
No, I mean for the decade.
Oh, for the decade.
Because like, if you think about it, we got Anderson front kick. We got Holly Holm getting front kicked. We got Masvidal's 5-second knockout. We got Terry Enem getting crushed by Barboza.
Holly Ronda. Yeah. Holly Ronda is knockout of the decade.
I think it's 1A, 1B with that and the Anderson front kick.
Anderson is
because
pretty
that's
good.
Pretty iconic.
Yeah.
It's one of those two for me.
I don't pick that one because I count every factor. So I count the upset factor. Anderson was a favorite already, a pretty heavy favorite going against Vitor. That's why it doesn't surpass it to me. Just because it was expected. Not expected like that, but the victory was expected.
Yeah.
So, but Holly Ronda to me is the because that knockout still to me changed the world, changed MMA, changed pop culture.
Yeah,
changed a lot of things.
You said Francis and Overeem.
Those are great
Connor
knockouts.
Aldo?
Conor Aldo.
Those are great knockouts, but those were to me like
Conor knocking out Aldo did not change pop culture.
It did.
It for sure did.
It did. I'm going to disagree with you.
Yeah, it for sure did.
No. I don't think it did as much as Ronda losing to Holly.
Nope.
Yeah.
Remember the very next...
I will say just in terms of like for pop, it was Ronda was like more pop famous at that mm-hmm. time in the sense that when we got into a taxi, when we got back from Australia after that knockout, it was all over the radio, pop radio. It was like Kiss FM or something.
It was everywhere.
And like the driver was like asking us about it.
It was in freaking Last Week Tonight. Remember?
It was last week tonight.
They were talking about on just news shows. Like,
yeah.
The Conor thing was a giant, like, he's a celebrity, it's a giant sports thing. Like, the Ronda knockout was, and then it changed everything because then Ronda basically retired after that. She had one more fight, but she was done. And then you had the, you know, she went to the WWE. Like, it changed so many things.
What about
In terms of just crazy knockouts, what about Yair, Korean Zombie?
Now, if we're talking just knockouts independent, just what they are right then, yeah, Yair.
What about Hendo and Bisping?
It was cool.
2009, so that's 10 years, right?
Oh, yeah.
UFC 100?
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, that was the other vote we were getting. 100 and 189 were the two.
That's right. UFC 100 was awesome. Yeah.
All right.
Well, I think that's it for the A side this time. We got to go to sign open workouts. It's a, what is it, a fan Q&A thing? Because like any UFC 244, no one worked out. They just did Q&As the whole time. So they're trying this new thing. So we have to run to that. So stay on the YouTube channel and then we'll get those videos to you ASAP. Or you can go hang out on our Twitter or Instagram. We got all kinds of fun content. These two have epic UFC 245 timelines. So watch all three of those, and then when we're done at the Q&A, watch those videos. But for Jose, that's Casey, that's Esther. We're out.
This is Testicle Talk.
You had to end it that way, huh?
Crystals.
Wow, guys.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.